All right. So are you still there?
I'm there.
Okay, good. All right.
You want the line?
Give me 1 second. Okay, so we are holding on "Hey, I'm a Daze" by the parenthesis, about a third of the way down the onward. And line against Lakatos.
Okay.
Yesterday we had on Omad Aleph we had a discussion that started with the sluggish wondering, why is it in the case of our Mishnah, we were saying that you bring a korban and it was brought and it was then accepted, Shalom Lishma, we're saying you're going to continue with the process of bringing the korban anyway, and even the korban will eat, and the korban and everybody will eat it, if it's a korban that's to be eaten, what's the law of it? He says, what's the point of it? If it's going to be mechaper, then if you're bringing it, it ought to be mechaper, and if it's not going to be mechaper, why are you bothering to bring it?
So we said he was mechayev, alatzmo, to bring a korban.
Right, well, that's the question. That's the Shlokish's question. What's the point of bringing the korban in that case? Why are we obligating him to bring the korban? And not just why are we obligating him, why are we going through the whole process of considering it as if it was a kosher korban, and we go ahead, we continue with the rest of the four avodas, and we go ahead with burning the relevant pieces on the mizbeach, and eating the relevant pieces, and so forth. If it's not accomplishing kapara anyway, why bother with all of that? Granted, okay, it's not possible per se, fine. So what you should do maybe is, I guess the Shlokish is thinking maybe what we should do is fine. We should consider it like a korban that's sort of semi-possible, where we have cases, we'll learn later on in the Masechta, you have cases where a korban is like semi-possible but not completely. We don't go and take it and burn it right away, fine. But what we do is we do ibur tzura, we leave it overnight until it becomes possible, so according to some Rishonim, until the meat actually starts rotting or whatever, and then we take it and burn it. So maybe his point is, why don't we do that? So maybe Rashi mentioned the point before at the beginning, earlier in the Sugya, about specifically there's a fact that we see that even that it gets eaten. Why don't we say at least to that extent? We should say, fine, the rest of it should be brought, the fat should be brought on the mizbeach, the blood should be sprinkled, et cetera, but maybe it shouldn't be eaten. So in any case, we said in the discussion over there that Rabbi Elazar answered him, so what? You find a case where an oila is brought after a person passes away. Namely, you have the case of a woman who gave birth, where she brought her chassas, and then died before she brought her oila, where her heirs bring the oila.
But the oila is not eaten.
The oila is, right. Well, that's the Shlokish answer to that. The Shlokish said, fine, I have no problem with an oila being brought, la'achamisha, but I do have a problem with an osham being brought. The same way as you don't bring an osham, la'achamisha. Instead, what you do is you send it off to Gwei. By that logic, why are we saying that you bring an osham in this case where it's not accomplishing kapara? So now we're going to continue. Now we're going to continue the later Amoraim now who we're going to have in our Gemara are going to be analyzing this discussion between the Shlokish and Rabbi Elazar and analyzing their premises, analyzing the premise of the Shlokish's question and the premise of Rabbi Elazar's answer. Simon Hagish Vatis. We have a simon over here for the initials of the Amoraim who are involved in the two parts of the discussion, isn't it? Hagish Vosser, it should just be Hanish Neser, or something like Nesed, whatever. The initials or the significant letters in the names of Amoraim, Rav Huna, Rav Nachman, Rav Sheshet, and so forth. Okay. So Yosef Rav Huna, Rav Nachman, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are sitting together. The Yosef Rav Sheshet Gabay, Rav Sheshet is sitting together with them. The Yasu the family, so they're sitting and discussing as follows. How does this work? So what is, we're saying the premise of Rishlokish's question is, given that you don't bring an osam after the owner of it passed away, then in that case over here, why are we, because in other words, because it can't accomplish kapara over there, so why in this case are we bringing an osam when it's not accomplishing kapara yet? So they're asking, what kind of a question is that? Lamele Rabbi Elazar, instead of Rabbi Elazar brings him as a side thing, he says, well, you find, he says you have the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, who says the Osham would be possible in this case, and the Shlokish dismisses that by saying, I'm not asking according to Rabbi Eliezer, I'm asking according to the Tanakama. Why doesn't Rabbi Elazar give him a simple answer? Osham nami afi la'achamisha.
Right.
Wait a second. It's not that. Sorry, Ellie is asking about dialing in. Okay, sorry about that. All right, that's the same hold around. Okay, so the question again is as follows. Why doesn't Rebel Lazar tell this locker? It's very simple.
Hello?
Okay. Everybody's still here? Good. All right. So Ron Hay, we're on Hay on the day. We just got started a minute or two ago. Okay, so we're asking like this. The Schwarkish had said, and I'm an Alice, and there comes another. Chin. Okay, I hope we have everybody still. All right. So we're on Hay on the days. Let's start over again. We're on Hay on the days by the parenthesis, Simon Haggish Vosser. We're going to be revisiting the discussion between Rish Lakish and Rebbe Lazar that we had on Amud Aleph, where Rish Lakish asked the question, given that if an Asham, if the owner of an Asham passes away, you don't bring the Asham anymore, instead you send it off to pasture so it develops a mum, and why is that? Because it can't accomplish kapara for him anymore. Well, by that logic, why don't we say the same thing then, that in this case, since the Asham is not able to accomplish kapara, because we said in the Mishnah that it doesn't, because we said that it's a kosher carbon that doesn't count for the owner's choice, so why are we bothering to bring it? And Rebbe Lazar answers him, okay, I can find you the opinion of Rebbe Eliezer in the Mishnah who agrees with you. Rebbe Eliezer says an Asham would be possible in that case, presumably for that, because of that logic. And Rish Lakish dismisses that, and he says, I'm not asking. According to Rebbe Eliezer in the Mishnah, I'm asking according to the Tanakhama. So our Gemara, Yosef Rav Huna Rav Nachman, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman are sitting together, the Yosef Rav Sheshet Gabayu, Rav Sheshet is sitting together with them, the Yosef Rav Ami, so they're sitting and saying as follows. I don't understand. Kashubel and Rish Lakish Asham, so why Asham Acham Mishnah? Rish Lakish is having a problem with the idea that an Asham can't be brought after the person dies, which is because it doesn't accomplish Kapara anymore, and therefore he's asking by the same logic, why are you bringing an Asham over here where it can't accomplish Kapara? Instead of bringing him the opinion of Rabbi Yezer, let Rabbi Lazar, the Amora, answer him. I have a very good answer. Asham nami asila achamisha. I can, in fact, find you an example where an asham is brought as a carbon after the owner dies. Namely, so we talked about here and there. We talked here and there. Hold on. Okay. We talked here and there about Chataris HaMesis. We learned about them most recently in Herdius. They have various cases where an animal can't be brought to the Chafis anymore, and therefore we lock it up in a room and leave it to die. Well, Halacha L'Moshe Sinai is that any such case that would happen with an Asham, let's one of them being the owner died, for example, instead, with an Asham, we don't leave it to die. With an Asham, instead, what we do is we send it off to graze until it develops a mum. What happens when it develops a mum? We sell it, and we use the money to buy an Ola. So effectively, therefore, you have that, yes, here you have an animal that was supposed to have originally been used as a carbon, but now instead, its value is being used as a carbon. Fine, you're monetizing it, you're turning it into cash, and you're using the cash to buy another animal for a carbon. So let Rebbe Lazar say to this locus, you're wondering that if Acham Nisra, we don't bring an Asham. True, we don't bring the Asham itself, but we do bring another carbon that comes as a result of that Asham, namely we transfer its Kedusha onto an animal for an Ola, or not transfer, whatever, you exchange it for money and take that money and buy an animal for an Ola. So there you go, an Asham can, and so not the Asham itself, but something from the Koyach of that Asham is brought La'acham Nisra. So by the same law, it's here, fine, on Nisra could be said, you bring the Asham itself, even though it's not accomplishing Kapara. Why didn't he say that? Amalah Hu Rav Sheshet, but Rav Sheshet says, that's not a very good objection against Rebbe Lazar. Asham L'mai Kodesh, in what sense, after all, are you saying that an Asham is brought under such circumstances? It's not the Asham itself, it's not the animal itself. L'mai Kodesh. All you're saying is that the leftover of it, in other words, that, yeah, exactly what we just said. You take the animal, and you wait till it develops a mum, and you use the money to go buy an oil. Actually, technically, you don't use it to buy an individual oil. As Rashi says, over here, you use it to kai something they actually use that money to buy one of those oilers that they brought, that the Sidra bring is doing flax season when there's very few carbonists being brought on the Zayach. Fine, but the point is, it's not the animal itself, it's its value. by that logic, if you're going to argue, if you're going to argue that way, Shachas Nami Mishra of Korva Moitra. In that case, I can give you an example where the same thing happens with a. I can bring you an example where the same thing happens with a chatah. Normally, of course, if a chatah, if Mesa Balel, if the owner died or is a scapper with another one or whatever, normally you say that it's, that's Talmud, you leave it to die. However, we do have a scenario actually where where we take an animal that conceivably could have been a chassas and use the money instead to buy another carbon. Namely, we have a case, Rashi explains over here, you have a case called achrayus. You have a case where, to begin with, a person was obligated to bring a chassas. Avram Moshe, by the way, I think it might be the recorder that you're using. It might be too close to the phone. We're hearing a little feedback.
Better?
I still hear it a little bit, but all right, I guess it'll pass the group. All right, where were we? Okay, so let's say you have, fine. The normal case we talk about, chatoi, chameses, is, for example, a person was chayv a chatas, he set aside one animal for a chatas, then later on he died before it could be brought. That's when we say tumult, that we leave that chatas, that we lock it up in a room. But you can have a case where, to begin with, the person set aside two animals for the chatas. He has a backup. He has a, it's called a chrayus. This way, in case one of them develops a wound or otherwise becomes unavailable, he has the other one available. Then we say the rules are different. To begin with, neither of them was 100% for sure that it was going to be brought for the chatas. Each of them was a 50-50 chance because you have each one of them is kind of a backup for the other. Therefore, if one of those animals, if that animal, the backup one, at any rate, if that develops a mum, in fact, we don't, or for that matter, if he did end up using the first one as his carbon, we don't send the second one off to die. Instead, we sell it and we use the money to buy, we use the money for kites and a zeh. We use it to buy an oila. So the same kind of logic you, Rav Huna and Rav Nachman, are saying that you could use an osam, that an osam gets transformed. Well, the money of it gets transformed into an ola. The same exact thing happens with a chatas as well. But yet, we know that there's an obvious difference. A chatas is chosul shalo lishma. So Reshlokis still has a point then, and Rav Elazar has a point in not mentioning this detail, because obviously that doesn't make a difference. So a chatas is chosul shalo lishma, completely chosul, that is, not to say it doesn't count for the owner. Regardless of the fact that you do have a scenario where it's able to be transformed into an ola. So therefore, you have no particular reason to think that Rav Elazar should think that, or Ishwakis, for that matter, should think of this an argument as being very compelling. Okay, and continues the Gemara, Chassas Afagav Dekorva Moishra, nevertheless, even though we have that scenario where the money that was supposed, that where the money of an animal that was supposed to be for a chassas ends up being brought to the carbon, nevertheless, Miyot Rachmanahu, nevertheless, when Miyot, from the word who, where it says by the chassas of a nasi, it says that it has to be shechted chassas who, it is a chassas, which is where we learn from later on, in a couple of blocks when we start getting into the details how we know that a chassas is also shalai l'shma. We're going to say that we learn from that word who, that it has to be l'shma, and if not, that it's possible, unlike most of the other karbanis. So the fact that you have a scenario where a chassas can be brought, where something can be brought as a result of a chassas, la'achamit, that doesn't make a difference, because we have that meal too. So therefore, in other words, so it doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter whether you can actually find some scenario where the moisture of it can be brought. That obviously doesn't make a difference. Okay, the Gemara asks in that case, by that logic, also nami k'zehu. By that logic, it also says the word who in connection with an awesome. So why b'chlal are we saying then that a chatas shalo l'shma is possible, but an osam shalo l'shma we're saying in our Mishnah is not possible, it just doesn't count for the honor? Which was kind of the premise of Rish Lakish's question in the first place, why should the osam be kosher if it's not accomplishing kapara anyway, but he was asking a more basic question. You're telling me, as a preview now of what we're going to learn later, the reason a chatas is possible shalo l'shma is because of the word who. Well, by an awesome, it also says who. And yet we say that an awesome shalai l'shma is kasha. So one way of looking at it is the Gemara is asking one way of looking at it is the Gemara is asking the question on Rav Sheshet. The other way, which is Tosfos's way of looking at it, is that Rav Sheshet himself is continuing with is continuing by explaining by explaining his point that just because you have a chafas, that just because you have a chafas, a case where a chafas can be brought la'achamisa, or rather an oila can be brought because that chafas doesn't really make a difference. And what's the reason? The reason is hahu. That word who in connection with an asham, la'achak taras emurin hugachshiv. That word who is actually stated in connection with an asham only after the emurim, only after the fact is burnt on the mizbeach. Namely, in other words, it's true. It does say the word who by a chatas, and it does say the word who by an asham. The difference is, with the chatas, it says it in connection with the shechita. It says that it should be shechted, and then it should be shechted as a korban. Chatas, it should be shechted with Nei Hashem. Chatas hu, in the place where an oil is shechted, chatas hu, it is a chatas. And that's where we learn that it has to be done the same chatas, and it's not as possible. As opposed to by the Osham, where does it say the word hu? It only says it after it talks to it, so it talks about how it has to be, where it has to be shechted, what has to be done with the fat of it, etc. After it describes how the fat is burnt on the mizbeach, then it says that it's a korban brought on the fire for Hashem, Yishal Hashem, Osham Hu. It is an Osham. So therefore, that's a different thing. So if it's talking about only that it's an Osham in connection with burning the fat, that's a whole different thing than saying that it has to be an Osham in connection with the shechita. Kibitanya, as in fact we learn in the Braisa. Aval osam lenema bohu, el alacha charas emurin. By an osam, it only says the word who after it describes how the fast is burnt on the mizbeach. And vahu asma, even was it tira emurin, kosher. And after all, we know a korban is still kosher even if the fat was not burnt on the mizbeach. It's not ideal, but once the four avodas are done, when and the last one of them is the drika, sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach, at that point, that's it. At that point, the korban is kosher, the owner has been yoseh. Okay, there are more things that are supposed to be done. The fat's supposed to be burned, the carbon is supposed to be eaten, their relevant parts, etc. But still, those aren't essential to the validity of the carbon. So therefore, if it only says the word who in that connection, obviously it can't come to be teaching us about lishma and shalor lishma when it comes to an awesome. Because by the time you get to Akhtara Semurin, lishma, not relevant anymore. Lishma, not lishma, only applied by the four avodas. So that's the answer, in other words. So, yes, it says who by both the chatas and an asham, but the meaning of the word who is different in each case. By the chatas, it's in connection with the shechita, which is the first of the four avodas. Therefore, it teaches us that if it's shalor lishma, it's possible. And we had also before in the Gemara that says oisa, which teaches us that that rule applies only to a chatas. We don't learn from it to other karbanas. On the other hand, by an asham, where it says who, that's meant to teach us something else. Okay, so now the question is, well, what does it come to teach us? The Elohu Lomali. So what is the word who coming to tell us in the case of an awesome? The answer is V'chud Rav Huna Amar Rav. It comes to teach us what Rav Huna says in the name of Rav. The Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, awesome to Nitzak L'Ri'iyah. If you have an awesome which was pulled away to be, or sent away to be pasture, to go to pasture. Again, we said before that there are cases where an animal can't be brought as an osam anymore. For example, the owner died, or for example, he lost it and brought a different one or whatever. And he said that what's supposed to happen then is we send the original animal off to graze until it develops a mum, and then we use the money to buy an ola. Nitak means it's been pulled away in the sense, and actually says, Beistin told him, or Beistin told the heirs, if he himself died, whatever, Beistin said, sorry, you can't use this as an osham anymore because Meishu Bailov or Mishapu Bailov or what have you, take it and send it off to pasture. So what happens, though, Rav Huna is saying, if that happened, the Shochtei Shtam, instead what you did is you shechted it without specifying what kind of korban it is, kosher. Then it's kosher as an oila, because the bottom line is what's going to happen, what was destined to happen with it anyway. It was supposed to be you're going to wait till it develops a mum and use the value of it to buy an oila anyway. So in this case, you sort of jumped the gun. You went and brought it itself as an oila. But yeah, it's okay. Implying, and furthermore, the implication is nitak ein loy nitak loy. And furthermore, that din, the Rav Huna's din also only applies if it was actually nitak, if Beistin had actually told him, take it away from here, go send it off to the shepherd and let him start taking care of it. Loy nitak, but if that hadn't even happened yet, So let's say, in other words, the owner of it died, and then right there on the spot, before even going and asking that basically, the Yuris, the heir, took it and brought it as a carbon, and then by default it becomes an Arla. So then what? Then we don't say that it becomes an Arla. And the reason is, why doesn't it become an Arla? Why in that case do we say that it remains an Asham? Only it's a possible Asham because the owner already died. But why is that? That is what we learn from the word who in connection with the Asham, that it means it retains its original status. So in other words, what we have, what we learn from who is as follows in the case of an Asham. You have an animal that was supposed to have been brought as an Asham. One of the things happen that you can't bring it anymore, such as the owner died, or such as the owner lost it, used a different animal as his awesome, and then this one turned up, or whatever. So we're saying like this. If before Nikach, before Beis Din told him, go take it away from here and send it off to the shepherd, if he would have shechted it at that point, it would still be considered an awesome. That's what we learned from the word who. If after Beis Din told him, take it away from here, send it off to graze, what's supposed to happen at that point is you leave it to graze till it develops a mum, and then use the money for a kais on his back, for an oila. But if, instead, you went and shechted it itself without specifying what kind of carbon it is, then it will transform from an asham into an oila, because that's what was supposed to happen with it anyway, is the money of it was supposed to transform into an oila. But in any case, that's what we learned from the word who in connection with an asham.
Unlike who
with a chatas, which is said in connection with the shchita, and therefore teaches us about lishma and follow lishma, right? Right.
So the who of the chatas is lishma, and the who of the asham is.
Just that there can be a case where, even though it's possible, it still retains the status of an asham.
Right. Okay.
Tosfos, by the way, has a bit of a different understanding of the Gemara over here, because Tosfos points out this whole concept that Beis Din would have to have this concept of nitak, this difference of whether he was told by Beis Din take it away and send it off to the shepherd. Tosfos brings a based on a Gemara in Trochan about that whole concept is not necessarily Daraita. So Tosfos takes out the word over here nitak ein loy nitak loy. That's rather what we're learning from the word who is a little bit different than what we have in the Gemara over here. Regardless whether it was Nisak or not, on a Daraisa level, it remains an Asham. The Drabanon, you have the concept about that once Nisak, then it transforms into an Arla.
But it doesn't have a needed, really, you're saying.
Right, because the owner already died or was in the staff or something else or whatever, right. So we can't say that it becomes a kosher or oila because it still retains its status of asham, according to Tosfos, but that's what we're learning from the word who up here.
Right.
Alright. Okay. Now another discussion, again, talking about going back to the Shlokish and Rabbi Lazar's conversation before. Yasu Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet. Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshet are sitting together. Yasu Rav Adam Amasna Gamay. Rav Adam Amasna is sitting together with them. The Yasu Rav Tamri, they were sitting and saying as follows. Let's analyze what Rav Elazar answered Rav Shlomi. Hotikam Rav Elazar, this is what Rav Elazar had said previously. Matsinu Bavoin La'acham Nisa. Rav Elazar says, you're wondering how it is that you can bring a carbon when there's no kapara in it anyway. What good is it accomplishing? So Rav Elazar says to him, I can give you an example where a carbon is brought la'acham nisa, shaded in merak, and where it's kosher, but it's not merak, it doesn't accomplish any kapara. Namely, the case we had over there where a woman gave birth, she brought her chata, she didn't yet bring her oila, then she dies, and we say her yosha bring the oila, even though they're not getting any kapara from it. So let's analyze that. Let's analyze what Rav Elazar's premise in there. Lame the latest Lakish. Why Rav Elazar is saying there's no kapara in that. Why doesn't Rav Lakish answer him? Sure there's kapara. Hanu Nami lies to Halizu. Why not? These guys are bringing an Ola. Why shouldn't it be a kapara for the Yoshin? Omalahan Rabadama Masna said Rabadama
Masna.
Nami Lakes. Lace of Halizu. The question is, Rav Elazar is stating as a fact that's an oila that a woman who just gave birth is supposed to have brought. Meanwhile, she died, and her yoshua brings it instead. Rabbi Elazar takes it as a given that there's no kapara in it anymore, because she herself is dead and kapara lamation, and apparently Rabbi Elazar takes it as a given that it's not accomplishing any kapara for her yoshua. And Rish Lakish apparently agrees with that, because Rish Lakish says, you're right, there's a difference, and I hold there's a difference between an oila and an oshem. But why doesn't Rish Lakish ask on Rabbi Elazar's premise? What do you mean there's no kapara over there? The Yoshua brings it. It's a perfectly good oila. Why shouldn't they get kapara for whatever an oila is supposed to be mechaper for?
What is it mechaper? Achar Misa?
No, it wouldn't be mechaper for her anymore. She's dead. The point is they themselves... No. Okay, hold on. You have a couple of different reasons why an oila can be drawn. You have cases where the Torah obligates you to bring an oila. For example, over here with your letter. You have cases, on the flip side, you can have a person brings an oila completely voluntarily for no reason at all.
Right.
But usually what it is, and the Gemara is going to discuss this point later, that an oila is a chaper for certain things as well. Namely, first, Rashi brings it over here. First of all, an oila is a chaper for an eser, a person, so we know there's no particular carbon to be brought if a person violated an eser, a person didn't put on fillin or didn't say Krishna or whatever one day. There's no particular carbon for that. However, a person can bring a carbon oila and not accomplish a kapara for that. Also, a person can bring an oila and be a chaper for a loisa such as nitekla eser. The kind of thing that we learned about in Makkos extensively and in other places, where sometimes, the Torah will tell us, don't do something, but if you did it, then do something else instead to make up for it. Those kind, you don't bring a chafas for. You don't get malchus for them. You don't bring a chafas for them. But again, a person can bring an ola and accomplish kapara for them. But back to our Gemara over here, the question is, Rav Nachman and Nachshon, his question is, why is Rav Elazar taking it as a given that this Ola is not accomplishing any kapara at all? Sure, it's not accomplishing any kapara for the mother because she's dead. But why isn't it why can't you say that it's accomplishing some kapara for the Yerush?
The Yerush, presumably,
at one time or another, the Yerush has missed out during a mitzvah assay. The Yerush, at one time or another, may have been over on a loisha session nitzah class, yeah? Whereby rights, they should have to be bringing their own oila for that. So let's say that if any such thing happened, if at any time they were over on an esther or alive on this esther, then this oila should accomplish kapara for that. So why not? Rav Elazar seems to say that not, and Rish Lakish apparently agrees with him. Why shouldn't it be a kapara for them?
There's a suspect whether or not there was a need for a kapara.
There might be, actually later on. The Gemara has an expression that ein lecha adam Yisrael she'ein mechuyav esher. You don't really find it's very hard to find a yid who never in his life was over on a mitzvah that day. You didn't have not one time in the person's life that he woke up late one morning and missed Krishna, for example. You don't have one time in his life that you have a mitzvah pasayach tishach as yadcha. Whenever you see a poor person, you should give him tzedakah. You don't inevitably have that one time in a person's life and miss doing that. So you have typically your average person, your average yid has needs a kapara at least for essays that he violated.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we say here that there should be that for the ocean?
Right.
Of Adam Amasna, sort of Adam Amasna answers then, okay, but here we're not talking about an oila that's being brought for a kapara. Here we're talking about an oila that's being brought because she was obligated because of circumstances, because she gave birth. Here you're talking about a woman who gave birth. In he yoda, banehom yodu, she gave birth. Her children didn't necessarily give birth. What are you talking about? They should get a kapara for. A kapara for what? It's not the same circumstances. However, Rav Asi challenges that premise also. Uman le malon the ikas kama esagaba lo neskapra. So who's to say again? When she brings this oila for your life, it's true it's the kind of oila that's an obligation on her for specific circumstances that she gave birth. But who's to say that this one oila wouldn't also, by the way, end up cleaning up any essays or lava nika classes that she herself was over on? Again, she being a typical Jewish woman, there's a likelihood that she herself at some point was over on an essay or a lava nika class. And therefore, Rav Asi is arguing, you're assuming that when she brings out the oila for Yoledet, it counts only for the Yoledet. It doesn't count for any other things that she might have done that require an oila. Why should you assume that? Assume that it's mechaper for her, for any of her essays that she violated as well. Well, then, by that law, given that it can be mechaper for any number of essays that she might have accomplished, and for that might have missed, rather, as well as for the fact that she gave birth, you're sharing nami mechaper. By that logic, you should argue that it's mechaper for her goshen as well. Because
when,
fine, they didn't give birth, but they have essays as well.
Where do we
back keep... So we're back to the question. We're back to the question, why are we not assuming, why is Rabbi Elazar taking it as a given that this korban is not accomplishing any kapara? When she was alive, it would have accomplished kapara for her, for being a yeledes, as well as for essays and lava nitik for essays. So now that she's dead, it can't be mechaper for her as a yeledes anymore, and it can't be mechaper for her own essays and lois essays, but it shouldn't it be able to be mechaper for her yoshin, the essays and lois essays? Why is
one,
it not?
One second, where do we see that a korban is mechaper for different averas?
Ravasi is basically saying, man le malon, who tells us that not? I'll tell you, actually. So based on this Gemara, and also based on a Gemara later on in the Sylvia, it comes out that, yes, one oila can be mechaper for many essays and lava nitra classes. In fact, the Altareva brings that point in Tanya, in Egeres HaTshuva, near the beginning, when the Altareva is discussing the question over there of fasting, or nowadays giving tzedakah to do tshuva for different averas. So the Altareva discusses over there, let's say a person did a certain Aveda many times. One way of looking at it is the fasting or the tzedakah would be like a korban ola. And we're saying in the Gemara over here that we have no reason to think that you need an individual korban ola for each esser. The fastest one korban ola can clean up many essers. By that logic, we should argue that the same thing could be true as far as fasting for tshuva. On the other hand, the other way of looking at it is maybe the fasting is like a chasa. And a chasa, you do have to bring individually for each one. A person ate many pieces of chalev, different halenas, whatever, then they have to bring different chatois. If they did, if they ate chalev and dam and noiser and so forth, then they have to bring a chasa for each one. But yes, the point is that yes, we have, there's no reason to think that not, and there's no skiing reason to think that yes, that one ola can take care of multiple things.
Well, then it doesn't have to be Ishma then.
Hold on. It still has to be Lashma as an Ola. It still has to be the same Kodesh and the same Bailim. Otherwise, we're saying it's not Mechaper at all. That was the point. That's the point of departure over here. But what we're asking is, again, the Shlokit can ask why you bring a Korban if it doesn't accomplish Kapara. Rabbi Elazar answers him, I have an example, an Ola of a Yeledek that doesn't accomplish Kapara after she's dead. So we're asking why shouldn't it accomplish kapara for the yoshin? So we're still on that question. Given that were she still alive, it would be mechaper, and it was if it was brought l'shma, it would be mechaper for not only for her as a yoledes, but also for all the essays and all the lava nitik essays that she did or didn't do. By that logic, it's the same thing should apply to her yoshin, that it should accomplish the same thing for their essays and life essays.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back to the question: Why is Rabbi Elazar taking it as a given that not, and why is Rish Lakish accepting that as a given that not?
Is it the Machlokes Tanaim?
No. We don't know. We don't find any reason to say it's the Machlokes Tanaim. But the question is: If you're telling me, for purposes of your question, you're assuming that these Goshen actually acquire that animal. So now let's question that premise. So we have over here, this is real Gedichta Gemara over here. This is a question on the premise of a question on the previous question.
Right.
So the member of the Kanya Lahu, are you telling me, you if you're assuming that this carbon should accomplish a kapara for them, are you assuming that these Goshen actually fully acquired that animal? Such that you should say it belongs to them and therefore it's going to be mechaper for them, because mechaper is something to scatter with something that doesn't belong to you. But I'll prove to you that not. Rabbi Yochanan says in a different connection, as far as that he niach mincha l'shnei bonav, suppose a person had a korban mincha, which he was supposed to have brought. Now, he died before he had a chance to bring it. He leaves it over to his two sons, who met, and then he died. Kreva, we're allowed to bring that korban mincha the ein bo shutfus. There's no issue of it belonging to partners. Namely, it's like this. Most korbanos, you're allowed to have partners bring a korban together. You can have, for example, two people can jointly buy an Ola or a Schlumim or what have you and bring it.
Carbon fake, for instance.
What? No,
carbon, right.
Carbon of the basin is kind of a special case, but yes, that's true. We did call it a carbon of short-lived and hardy as well. But yeah, that's in general about true of many of certain types of carbonics. A mincha is not like that, though. Even a person is bringing a voluntary mincha, not for any aveda at all. Only one person can bring a mincha. You cannot have two people jointly bring a mincha. The reason is, Rashi says, because the pasuk Rashi brings to the Gemara in Menachos, that the pasuk introduces the concept of a mincha by saying the nefesh ki sakriv. Nefesh means a single person. So therefore, we learn from that a mincha is one type of carbon that cannot be brought specifically. Yet we're saying over here that this person died a much over a mincha, and he had two sons or more. We're saying they're able to bring it. And there's no issue of it belonging to partners. So that proves they haven't acquired it. The Isak is at a Kanya Bahu. If you're going to tell me that they actually acquired that mincha, they wouldn't be able to bring it to Chalal. Nefesh Amar Rahmana, as you just said, as Rashi brings from the Gemara over there, that the pasuk says nefesh in connection with a mincha. Nefesh Amar Rahmana, the pasuk says nefesh. So therefore, you wouldn't be able to bring it. Obviously, the implication must be that they did not actually acquire that mincha. It's still considered as if it belongs to their father. Therefore, they're able to bring it, because therefore it's not considered that it belongs to Shushin. So very well, in that case, that ends up a kula, that they're able to bring it. In our case, though, we should say that it ends up as a chumra. By the same logic, we should say that if the Yeledis died and left over this animal or bird that was supposed to be her Ola, then her children don't actually acquire it. It's not considered that they actually inherited it. Well, if they don't actually inherit it, of course there's no kapara in it. Because you can't be mechatel, you can't be mechatel with something that doesn't belong to you.
Right.
But the question is, on the other hand, no, so you're telling me that that Yoshin do not acquire a carbon? But on the other hand, we find Rabbi Yochanan says, if somebody left over an animal that was supposed to be a carbon for his two sons, who met and then he died, Kreva, we do bring it as a carbon, the Ein Nemirimba, but it's not possible for them to make a tmura with it. If they were to say, I'm taking this animal that was supposed to be a carbon and exchanging it for that other animal, where the Torah says that if you do that, you chayev malchus and both animals become kodesh, that does not apply in this case. Now, why shouldn't it apply? Because obviously the reason is because there's shuk in it. If you say they actually acquired that animal, well, that explains why they are not able to make it a smurda. Why, even if they say I'm exchanging this for that, it doesn't work. It's not effective. The habilahu shuk in because they're considered like partners. And we have a Xeris HaKosuv, as the Gemara explains at the beginning of Torah, that partners are not capable of making a Torah. Again, if you have an animal for a carbon that belongs to partners, and they were to say, I'm exchanging it for that one, nothing happens.
So that's Chutzim and not Yoshim.
No, that's the point. If we say that these Yoshim have actually acquired it, where therefore now they have joint ownership of it, which is the definition of Chutzim, then
okay.
That explains it. Ellie, I'm a boy, Tanya Lou, but if you're telling me they haven't acquired it anyway, well, then it's still considered to be their father's. It's still considered to belong to a yachid. I'm Muri Nami Mimru. So why shouldn't they be able to make a tmura? So you have a contradiction over here. On the one hand, in the case of and it's really, actually, Joseph points out, it's a contradiction between two things that Rabbi Yochanan himself said. By the mincha, Rabbi Yochanan seems to be saying they don't acquire it, therefore it's not considered a mincha that belongs to Shuftin, because if it were, you wouldn't be able to bring it. On the other hand, by an animal, he's saying they do acquire it, and therefore they're considered Shuftin, and therefore they can't make a smurda. So it comes out of kula in both cases, but how can you do that? Either they did acquire it, or they didn't. If they did acquire it, then you're Shuftin, and with a mincha, it shouldn't work. And if they didn't acquire it, then in the case of a smurda, it should work. So the answer is shiny hoss. I mean, yes, the truth is we don't say that they really acquire it. In the case of the animal, you would think by rights it ought to be able to be that they would be able to make a smurda. But shiny hoss is different in that case. I'm not calling homer yomer because the pasuk says if exchanging he exchanges it, and the double expression teaches us l'rabas chayodus. That comes to include an heir. But nevertheless, Echad Meim Reve'im Shnayim Lemeter. Nevertheless, though, only one is able to make a Torah, two are not. In other words, basically, it's Exeret HaKasuv. It's Exeret HaKasuv that once you have two or more heirs, they're not able to make it a Torah. But nevertheless, we do say they acquired it. And if there was only one Yodas, he would be able to make it a Torah because he really did acquire it. So that answers the question. They really do acquire it. In the case of the mincha, then we say, in the case of the mincha, therefore, we say they don't acquire it. So in the case of the mincha, therefore, they haven't acquired it. Therefore, it's not considered a mincha of shushim. Therefore, you're able to bring it. That was Rabbi Yochanan's first view. Rabbi Yochanan's second view, in the case of the Torah, is true, they haven't acquired it. However, it's a Xeris HaKasuv that nevertheless, if it's one single heir, he is able to make a Tmura with it, and only because there are two or more of them, they're not able to.
They have acquired it?
They haven't acquired it. That's the point. They haven't acquired it, but they haven't acquired it. That is why in the case of a Mincha, we're able to bring it. It's not considered that belongs to Shushim. On the other hand, even though they haven't acquired it, Xeris HaKasuv is that from this word, Im Hamer Yomer, that there is a way where a Yodish can, that there is a way in which a Yodish can make a Tzmura, namely if there's only one single Yodish. Once you have two Yoshim, then already you have the, then ready to rule about, then ready to rule about two people not being able to make a Tzmura jointly kicks in.
Right.
So therefore, so that explains it. So therefore, so we're back to, so returning to our previous part of the discussion. Therefore, it comes out that that basically though the Yoshim do not acquire the animal in Yerusha. Therefore, so going back to our previous discussion, well, therefore, yes, the author is quite right in saying that an Ola that's brought after the mother died is not able to accomplish Kapara, because for the mother herself, obviously, it's not accomplishing Kapara because she's dead. And for her Yoshim, it shouldn't be able to accomplish Kapara because it doesn't belong to them. They weren't actually trained in. You can't bring a scapa with something that doesn't belong to you.
Well, wait a minute. They didn't inherit it.
That's the point. We're saying they weren't claiming it. So therefore, when we asked on Rabbi Lazar, what do you mean there's no kapara in it? It would have been mechaper for any of her esses. Why can't it be mechaper for any of her yoshim esses? The answer is very simple, because her yoshim don't actually own it.
So who owns it then?
Nobody. It's still considered, in effect, as if it's owned by her. It still has to be brought to the curtain because it was designated as such, but it's not accomplishing kapara for anybody. It's not accomplishing kapara for her because she's dead. It's not accomplishing kapara for them because it doesn't belong to them. So that's it. Therefore, Rabbi Lazar is right when he said before that here you have an example of a carbon which is being brought but not accomplishing kapara. There we go. Now we've justified what he says. However, we're not going to discuss.
One second. If something is not inherited, why do you say it cannot be exchanged? If there's nobody to inherit it, why shouldn't be in exchange? There are no shutrim there.
No. That's the point. That's what we said. That's what we said. From imhomer yomer, we have a gzeres hakosher. We have a ribui from the word imhomer yomer. That if there is one heir, so there's nobody else with him. That even though he's not really inheriting it, he does have a certain limited degree of inheritance on it to the extent that he can make a tmura with it. And only if there are two or more of them, then not. But other than that, we're saying it's not considered that the heir actually owns it. So therefore, again, in the case of the mincha, we say they don't actually own it. Therefore, you're allowed to bring it, and it's not considered that it belongs to the two of them jointly. In the case of the carbon that's left over that's left over from the Yeledis, we're saying that her heirs didn't actually acquire it. It's not considered to be theirs. Therefore, obviously, there's no kapara in it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara is going to actually ask sort of a side thing. Maskefa of Yaakov and Ahasakud, Yaakov from the Ahasakud asks on this, if you're telling me that you have the word in Homer Yomer, teaches us that when it comes to a person who died and left over an animal for a carbon, you're saying the word in Homer Yomer teaches us that there is a way in which the Yodish is able to accomplish a smurda if there's only one of him, but not if there's two of them. By that logic, Let's apply that to another process. Elamai afikav in maiso. Then what do you do in the case of maiso sheni? This is in go'el yizal, where we say over there, the prophet says, if redeem, he redeems. That if a person is redeeming his maiso sheni for cash, to take the cash to Yerushalayim and use it to buy food. And we know the din is, we know the word in go'el yizal comes to include also that if a person yarshim his maiso sheni from his father, he also has to add the 20%. He also has to add the chaymash.
The same logic should apply in that case here.
The same, exactly. Hochinami echad goyel vein shnayim goyelin. Are you going to say the same logic that only if there's one yodish does he have to add the 25% and if there are two yodish he doesn't? The answer is no. Shiny meiser, no, because meiser is a different case. Because even when their father was alive, there was no reason that meiser sheni couldn't have been owned by partners.
Can be owned by partners?
Yes, there's nothing that says that Maaser Sheni can't be owned by partners. If you have two people own a field jointly, and they own a bin of produce jointly or whatever, and they take out privilege of Maaser Sheni, yeah, the Maaser Sheni belongs to both of them. So therefore, there's no reason to think that in Goel Yigal tells us that all of a sudden, when you're talking about the next generation, that there should be a difference between one heir and two. Whereas when it comes to Shmura, since we know that in the first generation, in the father's generation, Kimura can only be accomplished by a carbon that belongs to him alone and not by a carbon that's owned jointly with somebody else, therefore we have reason to say that the Imhamer Yomer is telling us that the same distinction applies in the next generation also. Only if there's one heir is he able to be Mamer, is he able to accomplish a Kimura and not a Pharisee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now getting back to our main point though, Amalei Rav Ashi v'Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi now says to Rav Ashi, okay, so what are we saying over here? We're saying that if there's one heir, he's able to accomplish a tumura, and if there are two or more, then not. So the question is, umina, well then, prove from that itself. In other words, you seem to sort of be taking things backwards. You're assuming before that they weren't koneik, and you're saying there's an exception for tumura. But you could argue the other way. If you say they were actually koneik, well, that explains how the one yodish is able to be nomer, because it belongs there. If you're trying to say that there's no kinyan in it at all, then how is the Yurish able to accomplish a tumura anyway? You can't accomplish a tumura with an animal that doesn't belong to you.
So Rav Ashi is saying, in this sense, since you can exchange it, he has to own it.
He has to own it, exactly. But Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Yechanan, don't we see that Rav Abba who said in the name of Rav Yechanan, three dinim that apply to where you have two people involved, where two people involved with something, an owner and somebody else. Number one, hamakdish moisif klimus. Number one, if you have, and now you can have a case. Up until now, we've been saying that you can't be miskafa with a carbon that doesn't belong to you. However, in a certain sense, you can. Namely, you can have Reuven voluntarily says on behalf of Shimon, Reuven, let's say, has one day said, I'm obligating myself to bring a carbon. I'm making a neder. So Shimon goes over to Reuven and says, you know what? I heard you made a neder to bring a carbon. I'm willing to set aside one of my animals on your behalf to be yotzi your neder. And so the thing works. So now what happens, though? So again, you have Reuven, who is the neder, who is the one who made the neder, and he's the one, once the carbon is drawn, who the kapara is going to be accomplished on behalf of him. Shimon was the original owner of the animal. So now, what happens if, so this animal was set aside, then what happens, it develops a mum, so now you want to be machalit, you want to exchange it for cash and use the cash to buy a new animal. Which one of them, now we know if you're being kodesh kodshim, and they belong to you, you have to add the 25%. In this case, who's adding 25%? Reuven or Shimon?
Shimon owns the animal.
Shimon owns the animal. The answer is, Rabbi Yechon is saying, Hamashdish Moshe Premis, the one who declared a Hekdish, is the one who would have to add the 25%. So Shimon is the one who wants to buy it back from Hekdish to use the money to buy another animal. Yes, he will have to add the Premis, the 25%. As opposed to Reuven, even though Reuven has a certain degree of ownership in it, because he's the Meskafer, he's the one who the carbon would have been brought on behalf of. But he's not considered the owner to that extent that he should have to pay the 25%. That's din number one. One second.
So you can't bring a carbon without being its owner and still be the recipient.
Only provided that the owner gave you permission to do that. In the case of the Yoledes, she didn't necessarily give them permission. If she did, then fine. If she, to begin with, set aside the carbon on their behalf, then that's fine. But she didn't. She set it aside on her own behalf, and then she passed away.
Can't you say that it's implied in the case of Misa for the Yoshim? It has to be.
Apparently not. It has to be that to begin with, it was set aside for somebody else's kapara. And here it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing that din as a side thing. The reason we're bringing that din in is because Rabbi Yochanan had said three din together. The next din is the one that's relevant to our Gemara over here. So the next one is when we sapper Oseh Shmura. On the other hand, in such a case, which one of them is the one that would be capable of making a Shmura? That would be the Meskaper. That would be Reuven. So you have, again, so when it comes to being project, we consider Shimon the owner. He's the one who has to pay the 25%. On the other hand, when it comes to making a tmura, it's Reuven who's considered the owner of it, because he's the one who was going to have the kapara with it. That's the point. That's what's relevant to our Gemara over here. We have to say, therefore, that he has a certain kinyan in it. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to make a tmura with it. So back to the case of the Yoshim, it has to be that there was some kind of kinyan in it. Otherwise, how are they making a tmura in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
And din number three, if somebody gives truma from his own produce on behalf of somebody else's, so it works. So the other person's produce is not tevel anymore. Tova Sanah Shaloi, the one who designates the Truma, has the Tova Sanah. He has the ability to give it to whichever Kohen he wants. And let's say, for example, you can have a case, Rashi mentioned, you can have a Yisrael comes to this person and says, you know what, I have a grandson. My daughter married a Kohen, so I have a grandson who is a Kohen. Let me offer you some money, and you'll give that Truma to my grandson. Who does the money go to? It goes to the mafresh, to the one who designated the truma, not to the one on whose behalf it was designated. So there you have another example. In effect, this truma sort of has two owners. It has on the one hand, it's accomplishing something on behalf of the other person. On the other hand, so you have Reuven has a stack of grain, that's kevel. Shimon is designating truma on his behalf. So in a certain sense, the truma belongs to Reuven because it's being done on behalf of his pile of grain. On the other hand, in a certain sense, it belongs to Shimon because it comes from his own grain. We're saying the Tovas Hanah belongs to Shimon. Shimon is considered the owner of that truma for this purpose. Again, the point is
the truma belongs to the designant and the designated.
Right. Well, it belongs to the designator, the one who designated it as truma.
Right.
Not the one on behalf of whom it was designated. Again, we're bringing that in as a side thing. We're mentioning together three different dinim that Rabbi Yochanan said about these kinds of situations where you have two people involved. The point is that, going back to what we're saying before, that if you're saying that the Yoshi, that single Yoredis has the capability of making a tmura, that alone must imply that he has a certain ownership of it. So what are you telling me in the Gemara before, that we assume, therefore, that don't have any ownership of it, and therefore there's no kapara on behalf of them from this carbon left over from their mother? They obviously must have some ownership of it, otherwise Shmura wouldn't be affected. So that's the question, if they have some ownership in it.
One second, maybe it's enough. The ownership amount is enough to do Shmura and insufficient to do kapara.
Well, why should that be so? What's the logic?
Because tmura is less than kapara.
Unless we find some reason to say that. So actually, that is sort of what the Gemara is going to answer now. Mikiva loy mechapra, mikufya mechapra. You're right, actually. When we talk about that, usually what we say is, in order to be mechapra with a carbon, you have to be the owner of it, or else it has to have been designated on your behalf. But sometimes you have a concept called mikufya, where you have kufya literally floating around. In other words, you have a carbon is being brought. There is sort of a kapara floating around in the air over there when a carbon is being brought. And therefore you have to that you have the ability sort of to participate in that kapara in a certain way, like as an incidental thing. Kufiya is more like incidentally. So therefore, what does that mean? So when we talk about when we were discussing the question before about bringing the ola of the ladesh and having the owners and having the yoshim rather accomplish kapara with it, they can't because it doesn't belong to them. On the other hand, because of this Nikufia business, because of this business that, after all, there is sort of kapara floating around in the air over there, and therefore there's a certain, to a certain extent, they can share in it. That's considered enough of a connection to this carbon that they're able to accomplish tmura. So basically, sort of like what you just said, there is a bit of a difference to have kapara mitriva, to have kapara as a fixed thing. You have to be the actual owner of it. Otherwise, all you have is kapara Nikufia, sort of incidental kapara. But as far as Neymar, for that Nikufia, for that incidental kapara, is enough to make you owner insofar as Tmura is concerned.
Okay.
So that's that then. So therefore, so we've established that Rabbi Lazar was right, after all, when he said here's an example of a carbon that's being brought without any kapara being accomplished, namely the Ola of a Yeladis, he's right. Because even though we're saying there is a kapara Nikufia, there is a sort of incidental kapara happening on behalf of the Yoshin. That's not enough. You would need kapara mikiva. You would need a kapara that requires actual ownership. And that you don't have over there because Yoshin don't have actual ownership of a carbon. All they have is a limited amount of ownership that gives them the ability to make a shmura. And therefore, that's that. So therefore, Rabbi Lazar is right in saying that there you have an example of a carbon that's being brought without any kapara being accomplished. And again, Rish Lakish answers to that, as he said before, fine, I agree that I have no problem with that happening. In the case of an Ola, I have a problem in the case of that happening with an Osh. And that was the premise of his question before.
We haven't answered his question, by the way. Why are we still offering this carbon if it doesn't accomplish, or it will accomplish a partial kapara, not enough?
Ultimately the answer was because we brought before that after all, when you have a carbon that's being transformed from nether into an adava, it has to be brought anyway. It just gets transformed into an adava. So ultimately that's the answer, and we discussed over there how that applies to an asham, where an asham is not brought for debtor and a java, but ultimately that's the real answer. But we were discussing over here the original premise of Rish Lakish's question and the original premise of Rabbi Lazar's answer before we got to that point of saying why Tasha does it have to be done.
So the real answer you're saying is because it became an adava.
The real answer is because it became an adava and because in the end, in the case of a carbon that's brought in the java because it's brought as an adava, and in the case of a carbon that's not brought in the java, such as an asham, we said because very patarda, because of the hekesh between asham and most carbonas and flamen. So now a new part of the discussion. So now we have a question as follows. This that we're saying in our Mishnah, that a carbon that was brought to Lola Shmon, we said, of course, that the carbon is kosher, but it doesn't count for the owner, so he's going to have to bring another one. Meanwhile, until he brings another one, kipru amashabo or loy kipru. Did it accomplish any degree of kapara for what it was supposed to be, or nothing at all? Meaning, Rashi says, so like this, a person, for example, was supposed to bring an asham, let's say because he stole or because he had relations with a shikha harufa or whatever. So we're saying that he's supposed to bring an asham. Like this, we're saying that what could happen before he brings his carbon, he could be subject to yisurim. He could be subject to suffering, to sickness or whatever, as a kapara from Hashem for his avera. What's supposed to happen is he brings his carbon and that cleans him up and that saves him from yisurim. Now in a case like this, when he brought his asham, but it ended up being shalo l'shma, and therefore he's going to have to bring another one, during that time, until he brings another one, is he safe from yisurim or not?
No. He should bring it for this particular...
He has to bring another one. Of course he has to bring another one. There's no question about that. But meanwhile, does that first one that was brought to Lola Shema, does that at least help him insofar as it protects him from yisurim until he's able to bring another one? Amr of Sheshes Breda Ravidi, Mistaber of Lakitra. So Rav Sheshes, actually Breda Ravidi, says it's logical that it hasn't accomplished anything at all. He is actually going to be in danger of disturbing until he actually brings another one. He's actually Lakitra, because if you're going to say it with Mechaper, even to that limited extent, Shani Lomahuba, then why is he having to bring a second one? If the first one already is enough to save him from disturbing,
right,
then he doesn't need the second one.
Right.
Okay, so the question is, Elamai Lakitru, Lamal Karib. Okay, but you could ask the other way around. If it's not accomplishing kapara at all, it's not even protecting him from Yisurim, then again you're back to the Shlokas question. Then why are you bringing
it? Right, exactly.
Yeah. And Tosfos points out, the Gemara is almost like the Gemara is presenting this as a new question. Really, it's odd. It seems to be exactly recapitulating Rish Lakish's question.
Yeah.
Tosfos leaves it as a question. All right, anyway. So Amar Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi clarifies, let me explain to you Rav Shisha Breger of Idi's question. Rav Shisha Breger of Idi, Hocha Kochaslai. Rav Shisha Breger of Idi is wondering as follows. If you're going to say that the first carbon was not mechaper at all, and he's not even protected from Yisurim, then then what we're saying is the second one is being brought. On the strength of, because it started out as l'shmoy. In other words, what makes the first one that we continue bringing it? Because it started out as Lishmai. It was supposed to be Lishmai after all. So therefore you have, each one is accomplishing something different. The first one is accomplishing that it was supposed to be brought Lishmai. Therefore it continues being done, even though it ended up being Shalom Lishmai. The Shani Lomel Bolechaper, the second one then comes to the Mechaper, because without the second one he's not even saved from the Surim at all. Eli, I'm a Kipru. But if you're going to say that the first one at least accomplishes kapara, sheni lamahuba, then the second one wouldn't really be accomplishing anything at all. So that's Rav Shisha's graded of Igni's point, is you have to say, therefore, that the first one didn't accomplish anything whatsoever as far as kapara. The only reason it's being brought is because it was originally supposed to be Lishman, and therefore it has to be brought, even though now it ended up being Shalor Lishman. And that way, each one of them is accomplishing something. The first one accomplishes that it was supposed to be brought, therefore it has to continue being brought. It itself was karsim, so we have to continue with it wherever possible. And the second one is accomplishing the kapara. So therefore, that's that. That's where the Gemara leaves it. That's until he brings the second one, he's not even protected from the Yisurim. Now another discussion. Now we have another question. We said before that an Ola is able to be Mechaper for if a person missed out during an Essa. So this is now we're going to be asking a more general question. Now we're not dealing for the moment with the Shalom Lishma thing anymore. Now we're asking a general question. A Essa del Acha HaFrosha Mechaper or Ola Mechaper? We know that if a person missed out on a Mitzvah Saseh, then they can bring an Ola. Do we say, now, so let's say he missed out on Mitzvah Saseh, he missed saying Krishna on time on Sunday. So on Monday he set aside an Ola. No question that Ola is going to be Mechaper for that. What happens, though, if on Tuesday, before he had a chance to bring the Korban, he again missed out saying Shema? Does the Ola count for that thing that he missed on Tuesday as well? Or not? Maybe it only accounts for things that were done before he set it aside.
We asked this question previously. We said that you said that there's no reason why an Ola couldn't accomplish several kaparas.
Of course, but that's if they all happened before he set it aside. So if he missed Shema on Sunday and on Monday and on Tuesday and then on Wednesday he sets aside an Ola, no question that it covers all three of them. He was asking, he missed Shema on Sunday, set it aside on Monday, missed Shema again on Tuesday. Is the Ola covering missing it on Tuesday, or is he maybe going to be in danger of Yisurim or other things, or does he have to bring another Ola or whatever for having missed it on Tuesday? Do we say that we should compare an Ola in that sense to a chassad? And the rule is machatas to kodim afrosha and al achas, and a chassad only covers things that were done before it was set aside. a chatas, you bring an individual chatas for each aveda. But you have, you can't have that you set aside a chatas on Sunday and then do the aveda on Monday. Or for that matter, even never mind when he did the aveda. We can set aside the chatas when he finds out that he did an aveda. But whatever, as long as he doesn't know, until he finds out what he did wrong, then if he sets aside a chatas, it's meaningless.
One second, and if he makes it nigh, not with a chatas, but with an ova, that if he makes more averas afterwards, there will be part of that ova. Does that work?
I don't know if he has it. If we're going to assume that it doesn't cover later ones, then he doesn't have the ability to make sure it's nigh. It would be not across the Torah. It would be a tonight against something the Torah says. I suppose what he could do is as follows. If you're going to talk about tonight, I guess conceivably he could do something as follows. He could say that I'm going to designate this animal as a korban. I want it to not gain any kedusha of an ola for the next, let's say, 30 days. And during that 30 days, therefore, any time he misses shema or whatever, it's going to cover it. And at the end of the 30 days, it'll become kodesh, and then it'll cover everything from the last 30 days. But that's the question. Once it actually becomes kodesh, once he actually designates that this is an ola, does it cover anything that happened after that? So by a chatos, it wouldn't. By a chatos, such a thing wouldn't work. Ma chatos to kodesh plus the angel achatos aloi. By a chatos, it only covers what was the aveda that was done and what he found out about before he designated it, not afterwards. By the same logic, by an oil over here, maybe we should say the same thing. So maybe it's not like a chatas. The chatas are called chet boily through your chod chatas. Because after all, when it comes to a chatas, you have to bring an individual chatas to each individual aveda that you did. Here, as we said before, an oil can be machatra for many essays that he did before he set it aside. Maybe I acted al achas rasha nami machabra. Maybe indeed an ola should be able to cover also things that were done after it was set aside, before the carbon was actually brought.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's Maira time by you now, so we'll continue the discussion tomorrow between the Maira and Bezos.
Okay.
All right, thanks, everyone. Hope the audio was clear now.
Yeah, very clear. On the phone tomorrow?
Well, no, tomorrow night is Friday night.
Tomorrow night?
First of all, I'll be back tomorrow, as you say. I'll be back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Second of all, Friday night, we can very well do it over the phone anyway, right?
Well, right. No, I'm right. You're absolutely. But you'll be back tomorrow.
But I'll be back tomorrow, as you say. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right.
Have a safe trip.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.